Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Coach Jen, also from Ocala, Florida. And you are listening to the Horses in the Morning show on the Horse Radio Network for July 3rd, 2012, episode number 437. Good morning, Horse World.
Good Tuesday morning to you, and I do mean a good Tuesday morning.
Well, if you insist on being accurate about it.
Somebody with perfect comedic timing could produce this much energy in one shot.
You gotta learn that your time in the saddle ain't as rough as the life in between. And the fence isn't there for you to straddle. And you can't change horses in the middle of your dream.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Tuesday before the 4th of July here in the United States, Independence Day. We get to take a break tomorrow and have a day off. Well, thank you, Jennifer, for filling in today. It's just Jennifer and I. We are here. Jamie is not. She is off training her cross-country horse for the weekend. She's what's she moving up to, like three-star this weekend, Jennifer?
Yes, she's doing her a three-star, yes.
Yes, her first three-star event. She's listening to this, she'd have a heart attack. Was her first training? Was it training? I can't remember what level. She's told us 1,000 times, and I can't remember.
I'm pretty sure she's doing training this weekend, this coming up one.
So yeah. She was all nervous and excited all at the same time. So the problem is in Arizona, when you want to ride, you have to get it in early in the morning. And she had to travel about an hour to do this training this morning. It was like, okay, she couldn't do it after the show because by the time she would have gotten there, it would have been 115 already. So you have to do it early. You know, we thought we have a little bit of that same thing, but not quite as bad as the rest of the country right now. We can actually ride in the afternoon still here, unlike some parts of the country.
Well, now let's qualify that. You can ride in the afternoon, but thank you very much, Tropical Storm Debbie. When you get back, both you and your horse will have to have a blood transfusion because you've had it all sucked out by the mosquitoes.
Yeah, we did. Obviously, this is our first year in Ocala, and we thought, well, the mosquitoes aren't bad where we live until we had this torrential rain last, that tropical storm, which hatched all of the mosquitoes in Florida all at the same time.
Yeah.
And even when I take the dog for a walk, I have to spray. You know, it's just you have to spray yourself or you're going to get eaten alive. The poor pets. I know Beaker, you know, we had to get him stronger for fly spray because he wasn't having such good luck.
He looks like chestnut fur-covered cauliflower from all the welts.
I know. Poor guy. Hopefully the new fly spray is kicking in and doing a little bit better.
Yeah.
He wasn't too happy.
No.
Not at all. But we have a lot of guests lined up for today. Tell us about that, Jennifer.
On today's show, Debbie Metcalf is going to be stopping by first thing this morning from Stolen Horse International, known to you and I as netposse.com. They're the folks who help people with stolen, lost horses find them again. And they're helping out in the Midwest where they're having all these fires and horses and owners get separated. So she's going to be on. And HRTV's Jennifer Reynolds from Sandburr Productions is stopping by. She's going to stop and talk about a program that they have on HRTV called Inside Reining. And I zipped on over to YouTube and watched some of the clips, and it's a really fun, cool show. I can see why people love reining so much. And, of course, the velvety voice of Victoria Spicer is here with all of the latest and greatest from Horse & Country TV, which you can also watch, by the way, on HRTV. So there you go.
Very good. Well, I think we're going to open the chat room today. I'm not sure Jennifer is going to be able to participate a whole lot because she's actually hosting today. She has to talk. I'm making today. So we'll open it up. You can find the chat room by going to blogtalkradio.com, and you'll find Horses in the Morning there on the homepage. Just click on it, and you'll find us there, and the chat room will be at the bottom of that page. I haven't been able to join the chat room during the show because it sort of locks up my whole system for some reason, and I can't really do it. So that's why I haven't been in there.
We don't mind, Glenn.
I know. You've been talking about me the whole time, haven't you?
Yeah.
I can't see it, and I know you and the other Glenn are in there just chatting about me. I know what goes on. I have to go check this.
You.
I wonder if I can...
You just assume we're talking about you.
Maybe you're talking about Jamie. Maybe that's what you're really talking about is Jamie. That's what they're talking about. Well, let's. Do you have a daily Winnie, by the way?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'll do mine. My daily Winnie goes out to everybody in the United States. Happy 4th of July, Independence Day tomorrow. We will be off tomorrow. There'll be no show tomorrow. So, unfortunately, you won't be able to listen in, or fortunately, depending. And we thought, you know, yesterday was Canada Day. So we played the National Anthem of Canada. So we thought we would do the same today. One of my favorite versions of the Star-Spangled Banner is from the 25th Super Bowl. And, of course, it's Whitney Houston, so enjoy. And that's Whitney Houston doing the Star-Spangled Banner. That was from the Super Bowl number 25. I just love that version. Well, I have we have a lot of housekeeping stuff to do here this morning before we get into our guests. One of them is I wanted to respond to Denise Raymond, who posted on our Facebook page. She said, trying to find the name of the trail riding place in Gatlinburg or Pigeon Forge that was recommended on Horses in the Morning a while back. Yes, that is the trail ride I went on with Jennifer. We went together and had an excellent ride with our tour guide, and the name of the place was Walden's Creek Stable. And you can actually hear that interview if you'd like to. We interviewed our trail guide who took us on the ride on 9/27/2011 is when that show was. But it was Walden's Creek Stable, and it's waldencreekstables.com. You can find that. That was a great place. We had a blast doing that. It was pretty scenery. And that was the place, if you remember right, Jennifer, that the turkey flew down and attacked my horse's head.
That's right.
Scared the crap out of both of us. We had just started. We were just headed out. I had this great horse. Jennifer had the horse that was a little fruitier, but I had this great horse. He said it was the best horse in the place, so he gave me this great horse. And it was, we just headed out. I go across this little tiny bridge, little wooden bridge, and there were trees above it. And there was this turkey in the tree, which I didn't see. And he flew down and just about got 2 inches from it, hit my horse's head. Fortunately, the horse only spooked a little bit, and we were fine. But it was a way to start that ride. Now, I was expecting a bear around the next corner.
Yeah. I tried to buy that horse from him. He wasn't giving him up.
No, that's a pretty steady horse. I would have loved to own that horse. That was a great horse.
He was awesome.
anyway, a couple other things. Eventing Nation posted a jib-jab of the U.S. eventing team. You know what a jib-jab is? That's the website where you can put the faces of people you know on these little dancing characters. And they did the U.S. eventing team because that was announced yesterday. And we'll post a link on our Facebook page to the jib-jab that was kind of cute. There were some surprises on the U.S. Olympic eventing team. At least we were kind of surprised. Will Coleman and Twizzle was not a surprise. Tiana Codray, a Ringwood Magister, was on there.
Oh, Phillip Jenny will be so happy.
I know. She's going to be happy about that. One she won't be happy about, though. Phillip Dutton was on there with Mystery Whisper. Boyd Martin was on there, kind of a surprise, with Otis Barbeter. And that was not one that we were expecting. We were expecting him to be on with his other horse. Karen O'Connor was kind of a surprise with Mr. Mendicott. And the one that we were expecting to see on there that wasn't, that I think was kind of a disappointment this year, was Allison Springer. She did not make the team, and there were a lot of surprised eventers in the United States that were surprised not to see her on the team. I kind of thought she would be there and Karen O'Connor wouldn't, but apparently they went for experience this time.
Yeah, well, if we look at the list there, we've got a lot of experience on that team. I guess Tiana's
Phillip Dutton. Yeah.
Tiana's the real newbie, I guess.
Yeah, and I just wasn't. I wasn't expecting, I didn't think Karen would make it, and I thought that they would put Allison in to get her the experience, and she has a great horse, and she's been doing very well. And there were a lot of surprise people. I saw a lot of comments on a lot of the blogs and things about that. But that's your team. If you want to see them singing and dancing, you can check out the video that we'll post on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning here in a couple of minutes. Also, we have really bad ads on Friday, don't we, Jennifer?
We do. Get onto the web, folks. Hit up all of your local and national classified ads on the web. Find the snarky ones, the silly ones, the senseless ones, the ones that don't have any punctuation, and email them to Jennifer at Horse Radio Network for your chance to win, wait for it, a baseball cap with HRN on it.
That's right.
It's a highly coveted HRN baseball cap.
Yeah, it's been a while since people have had the chance to win the HRN, the coveted HRN baseball cap.
The only place that's the only way you can get them. You can't buy them.
No, that's true. And, you know, I had my favorite one that I had gotten when we first started the Horse Radio Network, and I have worn it, and darn if I didn't forget it on a ride at Disney at Epcot when we were there last time. I forgot it. I lost my baseball cap. I have to get a new one
now. Yeah, a little lost and found if you can find it. Do they have a lost and found at Disney World?
Can you imagine how big the lost and found would be at Disney World? It would be like a truckload of baseball hats that people live on their baseball hats, purses, you know,
sunglasses.
All of those things people leave on rides.
Sunglasses like crazy.
Yes, that's true. That's true. All right, one other thing is get over to vote for Jamie at Horse Nation. Go to horsenation.com, and she is running for one of those red, white, and blue, those colorful American helmets. They're having a little contest over there, and last I checked, she had fallen to second place. She was leading all day yesterday, but when I got up this morning, she had fallen to second place. I'm heading over there now. If you go to horsenation.com, just scroll down and you'll see a listing called 1K U.S. Helmet Contest. And Chad is on there, her husband, with her horse fighter jet. Chad's in his official fighter pilot outfit. And I'm going to check right now and see what the running is. But if you haven't gotten over there and voted yet, Please do that. All right, Jennifer. It looks like it's neck and neck. Melissa Perina or Pernia is in the lead with 35% of the vote, and Jamie is second with 33% of the vote. So we need you all to get out. If you didn't vote yet, get over there and place a vote. As Jamie was saying yesterday, when you're in radio, you never get a chance to win anything because everything we give away, we're exempt from. So she's been in radio for like 12 years. She did major radio in Atlanta and all that. She could never win the prizes. I was like, nope. She was dead set on winning this helmet this time. So we're trying to help her out so she can win her helmet.
There we go. So go vote. Horsenation.com.
Yes, give them a vote. What else, Jennifer? Was there any other? So we will be off tomorrow. We'll be back on Thursday and Friday of this week, so you don't have to worry about that, but there will be no show tomorrow is the way the schedule is going to work. A couple other news stories here. Let me see here. I'm scrolling down. So there was one that we had covered a while back. It was about this poor girl by the name of Amy Copeland, and she was the one, the girl, 24-year-old girl from Georgia, who had done the homemade zip line and fell and gashed open her leg and then got a flesh-eating disease. And we had talked about her a couple times because she has been so brave through all this whole process. Well, there was good news yesterday in that she left the hospital and went into rehab. She is missing her left leg, her right foot, and most of her hands. But apparently she's out of the hospital and she's happy to be out. She said that she's very excited. It's like a kid going off to college. She's just so happy to be alive. She relishes life. Every day is a gift. So, with that perspective, we have to keep in mind that we all have our problems. We all have the things that we deal with every day. But, this is a girl without her limbs, and look at her attitude, and I guess that's an attitude that we should also adopt. So, bless Amy Copeland, and we hope that she recovers. And she's in therapy, in rehab. She's going to be there for a little while, but she was very happy to get out of the hospital. It's been quite a while. So our best to Amy Copeland from Georgia. And now we're going to get to our first guest today, a regular here on Horses in the Morning, Debbie Metcalf of netposse.com. And she is here today to talk a little bit about what's going on out in the West with all the fires and how NetPosse is able to help out there. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning. How are y'all doing this morning?
Good. So happy to have you on today. Unfortunately, most of the time we talk to you, it's about sad things. Now, occasionally we get good news and we get you on. But today it's about, the devastating fires that are all over the West right now.
Oh, yes. We're getting all kinds of reports of horses that are missing, horses that are running loose, horses that are found. We've only actually reported one on the website because by the time we get the information and start getting the reports in, we find out that the horses are either in deceased or bad enough to have to be put down. So it's pretty sad out there.
Now, do you have any indication of how many horses are affected at this time? I know they have set up a bunch of centers to take them in. There's a place called The Ranch that they've been using that can house up to 400 horses. And the last I saw, they had 100 to 150. But I know a lot of these people just were not able to get all their horses out, so they would turn them loose, figuring that was the best option. And it probably was at that point.
Well, what do you do if the fire's coming and you can't get them out? You don't
right.
leave them there in an enclosed place to, when the fire's directly in their path. I mean, it's a really hard decision. We've had some conversations, or I've seen some conversations where people thought it was terrible that they let them out and that they were, going to be in harm's way that way too. But if you enclose them in and the fire comes right through your pasture, where are they going to go? They have no
right.
chance. And one of our victims, the horse was let out, but it must have gone back, and they found it later in the pasture. And, you know, that was, you know, very sad, but their barn was completely destroyed. If you leave the horses in the barn and the fire comes through, then you know what's going to happen to them. If you let them out, it, you know, they may have a chance to, you know, run for the hills or run for where there's not a fire. And that's where these horses that are being picked up, you know, I guess that's how they got them. I haven't heard about the ranch. I'd like to hear more about that and see if we can help them out.
Yeah, there's a, I'm trying to remember the name of it. I think it was, it's called The Ranch, and I think that's where a lot of the horses were ending up going that were, you know, were able to be trailered out or got rides out. And what happens with, you know, some people say, I have heard some comments, well, you know, they should have planned ahead better, and yeah, maybe that's true. But some of these ranches out in Colorado are huge. And some of these horses are ranch horses. They've been, they're used for working cattle on the ranch, and they may have 100 to 200 horses on these ranches. And some of them have never been trailered before. That was one of the problems they were having, is getting these horses on trailers and things like that. So, you know, I believe that you're better off, if that's the case, you can't get them out, you can't take them with you for whatever reason. They were spray painting marks on them so they could tell their own horses and turning them loose. Horses have that that same flight instinct that most other wild animals have, and that's to get the heck out of the way of the fire.
And that's exactly what you hope for when you turn them loose. And the best thing you can do is mark them in some way and hope that when the disaster's over that you can find them or that somebody picks them up for you.
How can you guys help at Net Posse?
Well, at Net Posse, one thing that we have disaster tips on the webpage, so that people can go there and learn different things that they can do before a disaster hits. And this isn't just for a fire. You know, Stolen Horse International, although we work with missing horses, you know, in other types of ways, we always open our doors to disasters and offer free listings, you know, for found horses and for lost horses so that we can help get those together. We try to teach people how to ID their horses ahead of time because you can't always be there when the disaster hits. Sometimes you don't have a warning. So there's different ways that you can ID the horses that are permanent. Some are things that you can do just for disaster seasons, like hoof brands. Those are great ways to put your phone number or your zip code or maybe your last name or something on the horse's hoof. It grows out in 6 months. But it still puts an ID on them that goes wherever they go. So there are different things that you can do. You can put bands on them. You know, with ID, you can tie things into their tails. But, of course, those are times when you pretty much know something's happening or going to happen. When you're not there, if you haven't prepared ahead of time, then it makes it a lot harder to ID the horses.
Yeah, no, that's why I saw that in Montana, especially on some of the larger ranches, they were spray painting the horses because it was the quickest, fastest way they could do something. Because these fires are moving pretty fast.
You want to make sure that you use non-toxic paint when you do that, too. All right,
yeah.
And there's markers that you can use as well. You just put the information on them and hope that they get back to you. And usually if you do something like that when they're picked up, you know, they're gonna find you. And, you know, one of the things that we, you know, would like to comment on is a man named Mark Higgins out in Montana has been helping us a little bit with some information about sending us some great pictures. And I think you saw one of those, too, of the horses being just walking down the road. You know,
I did see that. And actually, Jennifer, do we have Mark on?
We do.
Okay, so I think Mark is actually on the line here.
Oh, good.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay. So we were trying to get a handle on what it's like out there.
Well, you know, when you see a bunch of animals running down the road, you immediately want to try to make sure that they try to keep going the directions they're going. And it was really funny to me how all the people who were displaced by the fire automatically became like corral fences for these animals and just kept herding them straight down the highway further and further up the road. It was an amazing sight, and to see that fire raging behind them, I took that picture, and it's apparently gone worldwide now, and it's just an incredible photo.
Yeah, it was. It has gone where I've seen it about 1,000 times now, Mark.
When I saw it, I just thought this is the perfect way for us to to let people know that the horses are there, and that, you know, there's all kinds of ways that we have been using the photo to bring awareness. And we contacted Mark right away and asked him for permission to use the photo. And we're just real thankful you did that for us, Mark. And we're thankful that you're out there so that we can get good information about what's really going on the ground. He's kind of like our little roving reporter out there, unofficially. I don't know if he knows that or not, but we've been watching everything he's posted.
Yeah, I never left the fire area. I stayed, and I used to be a volunteer firefighter out here for the Bull Mountains, and so I kind of felt obligated to try to help protect some of my neighbors' properties, and we successfully saved quite a few of them from not burning down, and unfortunately, some of our neighbors did lose their places, but the flames just got too big. The flame lengths in this fire were anywhere from 100 to 300 feet in length. So they're quite tall, and you just can't fight that type of fire.
I was amazed at some of the videos I saw of this. Now, are you in Colorado or Montana?
I'm in Roundup, Montana.
Montana. I was amazed at some of these fires. You're right about the height of them, but how quickly they would devour trees. I mean, these trees were gone in seconds. It was amazing to watch.
Yeah, trees are kind of just a tinderbox. As soon as a flame gets up them, if you have the right conditions. And the day of the Dahl fire, we had 45 mile an hour winds and 13% relative humidity, and it doesn't take anything for the fire to just suck the moisture out of those trees instantly. And just, you know, a lot of times some of these trees will just explode because of the sap that they have in them. And the fire temperatures were well over 2,000 degrees, so. When that happens, it just moves through very quickly. The fire was moving at approximately 8 miles an hour, so it was really just covering a lot of ground.
Wow. Okay, so to relate that to horse people, Debbie, that's a horse at a slow trot. But imagine your horse at a slow trot and the fire keeping up with you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And where's the horse going to go? You said that they were coming down the road, Mark, and the people were kind of like a fence herding them on. Where did they go?
They ended up taking them a couple more miles down the highway to one of the larger ranchers along the side of the highway, and they corralled them over there.
Now, have all those – I talked to one group that's out there, but the ones we're talking about, do you know if they have all been picked up by their owners or been relocated to where they're supposed to be?
The majority of the horses in my area have been picked up by their owners and are back at their homes if they have a fenced-in property. There have been a few horses that are still just kind of running around, and I think you may have saw the photo I put on my page the other day about what happened to those animals, and there was one that was cut up pretty bad. But now those horses, too, are finally back at their own house.
Good, good. I did read that, actually, and I did see the marks on the horse. So,
and is your house safe, Mark?
Yeah, you know, my house is safe. It seemed like there's a complete circle of burn area around my property and my neighbor's property back here, but for some reason, there's still green grass. And I'm just very thankful that my property was saved. My father's house down the road was not saved. It was a total loss.
Well, we're sorry to hear that. And our best to you and to all of your friends and family out there. Stay safe, will you? And please be careful.
We will. And I hope that Debbie, you guys can use that photo for a long time to come and you know, really let it cause awareness for a lot of people.
All right. Thank you very much, Mark. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Well, Debbie, that was so nice of him to call in and talk to us. Give the website again that if you have a horse that's missing or you're looking for one, we can at least point people into one direction anyway.
Yes, they can come to www.netposse.com. And when they get there, all they have to do is click on file report and a missing report for lost horses. And we take care of it. If there's a fee that pops up for it, we waive the fee for horses in disaster. So tell them not to worry about that. Any horse in any type of disaster, we will help with in any way that we can.
Very good, Debbie. Thank you again for everything that you do and helping, you know, unite owners and their horses no matter what the situation. We really appreciate you being there.
Well, thank you. And please, everybody, go to netposse.com and look at our one-minute disaster tips. Those are things that, you know, we condensed them for you. You can look them over, see what can you can do real quick, and ID your horse, and then go to safety.
Very good. Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
It's always good to hear from Debbie, and she obviously keeps up on what's going on as far as missing horses in any kind of disaster, and we appreciate her coming on the show with us. Well, you know, you talk about fencing. Mark was just talking about fencing. We love our Field Guardian fence. If you're looking to put up any kind of electric tape fence, electric poly rope, or, you know, poly tape, then the place to go is Field Guardian Fencing. They at fieldguardian.com, they have everything you're going to need. And what's really cool is you just send them an outline on a piece of paper. You just, you know, draw an outline, email or fax it to them of what you want to do, where you want to put your gates and everything, what the distances are, and they will design the whole fence for you. They'll tell you how many posts you need. They'll tell you how much fence you need, how many insulators, how many gates, all of that stuff. And they actually lay it out for you. They'll send you an estimate of what it will cost, and you're good to go. They did that for us when we were putting up our fence when we moved here to Ocala, and they did a terrific job. We had just enough to do the entire thing. We actually didn't need any more, and we didn't need any less. It was just the right amount, because the last thing you want to do when you're putting up fencing is you're doing this project, you're bound and determined to get it done, and you run out of parts that, you know, you have five sections left and you're out of insulators. That's not something that you want to have happen. So you definitely check out fieldguardian.com. Their prices are terrific, their products are great, and they're made in America. So on this July 4th week, what a better way than to support an American company, fieldguardian.com, for all of your poly fence needs. Well, our next guest today, we've got a bunch of guests lined up today, and is Jennifer Reynolds. She is of Sandburr Productions, and they produce a show called Inside Reining that is on our friends over there at HRTV. And we're going to say good morning to Jennifer. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, I'm glad to be here. It's a beautiful sunny day in Oklahoma, and like it is so many places around the country.
Sunny and a little warm. Now, reining is mostly done indoors, isn't it?
You know what? It's done. It depends on the part of the country. You know, we have a lot of shows out in California on the West Coast where they are at least partly outdoors. Some of the arenas are completely outdoors. You know, some of the big events were at Gladstone years ago, and they have a big open arena that's beautiful. But a good percentage of it is done indoors. Yes.
I know a lot of the English shows have been having to change what they're doing because of the heat wave. Is it the same on the Western side?
Well, you know, I would say probably most people in our part of the country are accustomed to this part of the time of the year. They get up really early and they start working under the lights, and they try to be done by 10 or 11 to just keep it easier on the horses. And as far as the shows go, the ones that I know of are mostly the competition arenas are air conditioned. And so I haven't heard of any big changes, but certainly I would guess in places like Ohio or up north and where it's not normally this hot, they've had to change what they do to some extent.
Now, you're trying to tell me, Jennifer, that not only can you do reining and win money, you get to compete in the air conditioning too?
You know,
where have you been all my life?
The big events, I'm trying to think through them all. You know, like we have a big event coming up in Fort Worth in August, and obviously, I mean, it's darn hot always.
Yeah, that's
Fort
always
Worth
hot there.
August. Yeah, and so that's nothing new. Everybody's accustomed to it. A lot of the pens are covered, so at least the horses are, and the riders are out of the sun. And then I'm thinking through in my mind the smaller shows. You know, most of them are covered pens as well, and people are, you know, they're used to dealing with the heat. People who compete, and, you know, it's pretty much true in all horse sports. you're used to dealing with the weather, and so you make allowances where you need to make sure that the horses are comfortable, and you keep them under fans, and you keep their legs iced, and, you know, you do everything you can to make them comfortable. And I think, you know, I haven't heard of any major show changes, but there may be some out there that I haven't heard about.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Inside Reining. How long has the show been around?
We're in our sixth season, and yeah, so we've been around for a while, and we started out to a great extent. Our first few seasons were sort of ranch shows, and we kind of highlighted ranches around the country and then also some events, and then we've evolved more into an event show, and we've covered events all over the country, and we try to bring people some of the larger reinings and also some of the smaller reinings, so people can see that there's really a different level of reining for anybody who wants to participate.
You know, I actually think I ran into you. You were covering the World Equestrian Games, weren't you?
Yes, I was there.
I thought so. I think I ran into you there, and we may have talked for a little bit because we did the World Equestrian Games radio show. We were there. I was covering the reining as well, so I think we bumped into each other a little bit. I remember seeing you in your bling.
Was I in bling? What bling was I wearing?
Wait, you wear blingy shirts sometimes, if I remember.
Probably have one that says NRHA, kind of
with
the blingy. Yeah, yeah, I do have one like that. Yeah, I'm not a real blingy person. I don't have a whole lot, so that's not really mine. But I do have one that has a blingy NRHA across the front. And
you've got to remember, when you're in the English world,
there's
one
no bling.
Shiny button counts for bling.
Yes, bling.
No, it's funny too. You know, reining Western Pleasure was always more blingy, but the reiners are getting a little bit more that way. They, for years and years, people just wear their chaps and a plain shirt, and now people have a little silver on their saddles and a little more and more all the time. And the women are wearing a little bit more toward the Western Pleasure look.
Now, we have had a number of reiners on the show here, and, you know, they're all – I wanted to ask you about covering reiners. What I found, you know, in doing the World Equestrian Games, and we did that show 2 years in the lead-up to it, is – and I don't know if this is true across the board, and I don't know if you're going to be honest with me, but we found them just to be the most down-to-earth people to deal with. They were always willing to come on the show. They were always willing – and this is the top reiners, the Sean Flaherty's, you know, the Aaron Ralstons, they were just always willing to help out. Does it make your job easy or what?
It does. And, you know, the reiners are funny in the sense that the hotbed of reining now is in this part of the country, you know, Oklahoma and Texas. But it really got started in Ohio around the World Show, and there's a lot of reiners up in the Northwest and in the Ohio area, in the Ohio Valley. And lots out in California, too, that came out of that stock horse tradition. But when we, as a production company, first started covering reining, I was real familiar with a lot of Western horse sports, but more toward the rodeo end. And so when we got involved, we were trying to produce a new promotional video for them, and we were trying to find some emotion. And they're just very quiet, pretty humble, not a lot of throwing of hats or fist bumps, you know. And these guys would win, and they would just ride up the arena. And we said, for heaven's sakes, does anybody ever throw a hat? they're really salt of the earth kind of people. They just tend to take things in stride. And a lot of it is that kind of Midwestern Ohio, that attitude still sort of pervades reining. You know, don't get too full of yourself because, you know, the sport humbles you. The horses humble you. You know, just about the time you think you get it figured out, you drop a rein in the middle of the Futurity Arena or, you know, you just have a terrible go. And so it's the idea of staying humble, remembering where you came from, knowing that it took a lot of time to get there. You can lose it in a moment. People, they do tend to be really fun, really cool people, and that's probably what we love the horses are needing. We love the sport. We ended up just falling in love with the people, and so 10 years later, you know, we're still covering reining.
Now, how often does this show? Do you produce new ones?
We'll do about 20 new episodes this year, and it airs weekly, and we'll have we've been averaging about 20 episodes a year.
Now, we have Darlie Newman on from Equitrekking quite often, from the PBS show Equitrekking.
Right, right.
And we talk to her a lot about production because we're always fascinated by that. You know, and she travels basically with her husband as the producer and one cameraman. Do you guys go with a bigger group than that?
We don't. We, in fact, it's pretty hilarious. When we started out traveling a host and two photographers, and then over time we have cut back, and now generally I go on some shows and my husband goes, sometimes just himself, and then we work with the in-house photographer to get the second camera shot, and it kind of keeps the cost down. Because we went to that after 2008 when we just really had to pare down our budget and make sure that everything was affordable to the shows, because the margins are pretty slim for these people that are putting horse shows on. And so we do. In fact, we had Chris went out on a shoot, and there had been another production company at that ranch not too long before that with a whole bunch of people, and then he came in, and it was just him. And I remember the person at the ranch said, wow, he did just as good a show just all by himself as all those other people that were, you know, 20 people that came out here last week. And so we do. We try to keep it. We're from the news business for the most part, and so we work with what we have. We use minimal lighting. We use as much natural lighting as we can, and we try to keep it as affordable as possible.
Now, Jennifer had a question for you, Jennifer, about Rainers, because we have a habit on the English side of doing this.
Uh huh.
Well, in the English disciplines, everybody's nemesis is forgetting the course or forgetting your test. Do Rainers have that? Now, probably not so much, you know, with the world championship level, but is that something that haunts Rainers as well? They forget the pattern and foul it up?
It sure can. I mean, you know, the patterns are, there aren't as many patterns, and they don't, well, let me say, they have a variety of patterns, but they don't just change per show. So you generally work a pattern. You know it pretty well. I've always marveled at the ability for riders to come in and walk a course and learn it, and then I just couldn't do that. It just blows my mind that you could just have it change every time. But nonetheless, I mean, we just had an event over the weekend where the pattern ended with a stop, and there was a woman with a tremendous ride going on, and she stopped and then backed up her horse, and you can't. I mean, it broke the pattern, and she zeroed it. And the whole crowd knew immediately as soon as she pulled backward, and everyone screamed, whoa. It was amazing. There were 1,000 people screaming, whoa, you know. And then by the time she got her horse stopped, though, she'd broken pattern. I mean, it was just heartbreaking because she had this tremendous run going. So it does happen. You know, there was a guy I talked to, was one of the bigs, who overspun. You know, he overspun, you know, got his horse too far around, you know, or they don't, you know, they miss a spin. And it's the funniest thing, if you watch reining with any judge or reiner, they'll be talking to you and they'll be watching the spins and they will count them. They cannot help it. 1, 2, 3, whoa. You know, they can't. I mean, it's just because they have to count them out loud to themselves to make sure they don't get it wrong. But if you watch everybody in the crowd, they're counting it, and then they'll all say, whoa. It's hilarious. They can't keep from it because they're so trained to make sure they don't, because that's really a place where people will mess it up, and they'll get too many or too few spins.
So I'm going to reveal to the world my ignorance in reining. How many different patterns are there from bare bones, greeny beginner, up through the highest level?
You know, I'm grabbing the, I just grabbed the handbook, which is sitting here on my desk to see. There are, I guess, 12. I'm looking in the handbook right now.
There's 12.
12
so,
patterns.
In dressage.
That's what I kind of remembered, too, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there are usually 3 or 4 per level. So there's not quite as many patterns. Now, at the lowest levels of reining, which is something I could possibly conceivably relate to. When you get up to some levels, I'm going, I have no idea how they do that.
Well, that's kind of where I would be too. So,
the patterns are obviously easier,
right?
But is it essentially the same movements? Do you still have the spins, the stops, the slow lope, the fast lope, or are
exactly.
there actually different gates?
No, there are all the maneuvers are the same. The difference is in you have the very, very the lowest level patterns for the entry level and the green programs, which are fairly new in the NRHA, because they'd kind of gotten this reputation for, you know, reining is just too hard, you know, you can't do it. And so over the last few years, they've created entry level and green reining, where you can come in and you can even two-hand your horse. You know, it's funny, it's always been odd to me that they call it reining, because the whole point is to not use your reins very much, you know. So, but you know, they want you to just
true.
Lay that
I didn't
hand
think
down
about
there.
That.
leave your horse on the drape and never even move your hand off. You know, they may move their hand slightly forward or slightly back, but for the most part, it's leg cues and voice cues and other ways of getting your horse to respond to you. And, of course, the point of reining, which is the best thing about it, is that you're creating a horse that's willingly guided, a horse that is, you're cueing him to do it, you're not forcing him to do the maneuver. And so, but all the maneuvers, are they're all the same maneuvers, but they are done in a way for the lower patterns that are not as difficult. And the only real difference is they do not have to do the flying lead change in the early patterns. And it may seem like an odd thing that that's the most challenging thing that they take out of there, but it really is a showstopper for some people. So, so you know, the early patterns, but they're all, the maneuvers are the same, and as the as you start to get into the higher, you know, you can have a person do pattern three at a very low level and then get, a very low score, but someone take those same maneuvers and come in and do them perfectly and add degree of difficulty. And I would think of it in terms of what you've seen of, like, figure skating, where they have the maneuvers, but they increase the degree of difficulty, or in gymnastics, too, where they will look at, you know, not just what you did, but how well you did it and the degree of difficulty that you put in it. Did you do it? Did it go? Was it faster? Was it more challenging? Was it more perfect? And then those things will add points to your score. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Does. And yep. And I gotta tell you, I'm a horse husband, so you know, and have a wife who did dressage,
right,
and also did eventing. So you know, and watching dressage got kind of boring after a while. And I have to say, and I've watched quite a bit of reining now, the regular patterns, doing all of that, kind of gets boring for me a little bit. This horse husband, but freestyle reining is a blast because those guys pretty much do anything they want. Is there any rules?
There are. They have certain number of you have to complete a certain number of maneuvers, and you have to do them but you can do them in any order you want. It's really, to me, that is very comparable to compulsories in ice skating. So
yes,
you go and you do the compulsories, and there's not a crowd there so much for the compulsories, although the people that love it, love it. You know, so if you know, and I remember for years we would hear the crowd cheering for something, and we'd think, what? You know, what did they even do? We didn't see it. And but, you know, in freestyle, when they add in the music, and sometimes they're in costumes, and sometimes it's funny. I mean, we've seen some of the most amazing things in freestyle. Probably among the most was a horse, and they had a group of line dancers out, and the horse and the line dancers were all doing the same dance, and it was really incredible. I've seen a girl have a big soccer ball, and she had this horse kicking the soccer ball around, and a guy had a horse dressed as a bucking bull. And I mean, they do some really fun stuff, and so you see the maneuvers and you see the beauty of it, but you don't have to understand the intricacies of it to know the difference between, well, why was that a 222 run and that was a 229 run? You know, what was the difference, and why was this one so much better than that one? Because it takes a while to see that stuff, but freestyle just makes it beautiful and fun, and people always enjoy it.
And it packs the place. Freestyle will pack any arena just because it is so much fun.
It does.
If you ever get a chance to, like at Kentucky there this year, they almost packed that place during the Rolex this year for that. So
it is fun, and it's a great way to introduce people to reining, to let them see the maneuvers. But yes, they are judged on the correctness of the maneuvers that they're required to do. They just can do them in any order they want to. And, you know, I've seen guys go out and just kind of make their pattern up as they go along, and it's pretty amazing. But they know in their heads what all they have to get done before they finish, and it's still really cool. So that's really freestyle.
Now, one other question for you off of reining a little bit. By the way, okay, before we get off of reining, tell everybody, is it on a certain night of the week? When can they watch on HRTV?
HRTV is, and if you've got Dish, that's where you can find us. And we are on Tuesday nights, and we're on 8:30 Eastern time.
And you can get a subscription at hrtv.com and go over and watch all the shows over there.
Absolutely.
As well on your computer.
And
you
can
also,
see and the old episodes are at insidereining.com, and you can see them there as well.
And then there's also a blooper reel, which I watched this morning, which was kind of fun. Jennifer will post the link to Jennifer's Flubs-Ups on the blooper reel, and she'll post that on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page. But before you go, I also read in your bio, talk about off the topic here, you also do a game show for college students?
We do. We have a little. We started it last year, and it's done on a Oklahoma, like a statewide Oklahoma TV show called Mind Games, and it's basically built on the academic quiz bowl, and the kids from different colleges come in and compete, and the Chickasaw Nation and the Oklahoma Energy Resources Board put up about $250,000 in scholarship money that the kids competed for last year, and we're going to do it this year and expand it to high school as well. And an old friend of mine from television, from the CBS affiliate, here's going to host the high school version of it. So we'll have two of them going on, and it's been so great and inspiring to meet these kids who are so smart. They just make me feel like an underachiever, but man, they're good, and it's been great. So that's on, and you can watch. You can go to Mind Games on Facebook and check it out too.
And you know, so you're kind of like the Alex Trebek of Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's me. That's what I'm working on. My goal is to be as smart as Alex Trebek. Of course, I've always felt that Alex Trebek looks so smart because he's got all the answers on his little card.
Yeah, he's got the answers in front of him.
Well, and I always feel bad when the kids are wrong, and I know how much smarter they are than me, going, no, I'm sorry, that was the 12th century, you know. And you think, but I've got the cards here, and I try not to act like I really already knew it, because a lot, you know, when I prep my questions, usually I only know about a quarter of them, you know, and the others I'm looking them up and trying to figure out how to pronounce them and all that. I try not to do the Alex Trebek thing. Oh no, how could you get that wrong? Well, I'm looking at the answer, so it makes me seem way smarter than I really am. But it's fun.
I imagine dealing with college students, you have some bloopers off of that show.
You know, it's a funny thing. I think most of the bloopers are me. You know, the kids are brilliant. I always feel like the weakest link. You know, I'm thinking I'm the one they need to vote off the island when it comes down to it. They're all in there. They've all done academic. They've all done academic bowl, and so they know the rules. They understand it, and I'd never done it, so I was trying to figure it out as we went along. So I would say really I was the queen of the bloopers on Mind Games. It wasn't the kids.
Well, that's funny. What a difference between Mind Games and Inside Raining. Two different worlds right there.
It is. Well, you know what? You meet a lot of bright, precocious kids in Raining as well, you know. And so it does. We tend to hear so much about how bad the kids are nowadays and how terrible everything is. But, you know, I sure run into a lot of good ones out there, both in Raining and, you know, doing that show. And that makes me feel good about, you know, there's some hope. There's hope for the future.
Well, thank you so much, Jennifer, for joining us again. It's Inside Raining on HRTV.com. Check it out. We really appreciate you being here, and I hope you stop by again sometime.
I appreciate you having me. Thanks a bunch.
All right. Well, now we're going to go right to our next guest because she's calling in all the way from England, and we'll take a song break after we get Victoria from Horse and Country TV on. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning or good afternoon.
Hey, I have something special here too. Hold on. Let me pull this up. I got it right here. I have to give you a proper intro, Victoria.
Thank you for that regal music.
You're welcome, Victoria. Proper intro for you. Nothing but the best. Jamie's off today, so it's you and I and Jennifer here to have some fun talking about Europe today.
I can do that.
We go from HRTV to Horse and Country TV, and you guys have some of your programming's on HRTV, right?
Yes, they do a show a selection of our programs. So, yes, it varies week to week what they have on.
Oops, did we lose her?
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Oh, sorry. I thought I lost you there for a second. So now, Victoria, you actually have a good phone connection. Let's hope it holds up, knock on wood here. Tell me about, you got some bad news for one of your Olympic hopefuls yesterday.
We did. Such a heartbreaking story. Piggy French, who was one of the favorites for Olympic selection. Sure enough, she got the call up with two of her horses, and then we heard that it was just going to be DHI Topper who was in with contention because Jakarta was on the injury list. And yesterday the news broke that Topper has also been injured. He's out of the team. We've got Nicola Wilson instead. And I think there was quite a few disappointed people when Nicola Wilson didn't get on the team. Her horse Opposition Buzz has just been a real stalwart of the British contingent for several years. And so people were upset that they didn't get picked, but I don't think anybody would have wanted Nicola in with the sacrifice of not having Piggy. You know, Piggy really earned her place there, and she definitely deserved to be on the team. So it's just heartbreaking for her.
Yes, I can imagine it is. And she's always been a favorite, too. People like her. So that, you know, that it always helps when the competitors are likable and fun to be around, too.
She's lovely and just so down to earth and hardworking and humble about everything. And I know she'll be back. I think she'll be back for 2016. But I'm just really sad that she won't be there in Greenwich, because I think having won the test event, I think she was definitely among the favorites to do it again at the games themselves.
Now, well, I know that, you know, obviously our riders just did a show over there. They're done showing now. They won't bring these horses out again until they'll go through their training camp, but they're not going to compete them at all at this point.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much the same in the UK. I think that was the final trial for the eventers. I think some of the show jumping riders might come to Hickstead for the Royal International, which is a week before, but I very much doubt that there'll be any Olympic horses there. They'll all be there in their other horses. So, yeah, it's all into shutdown now until Greenwich.
Right. And you're speaking of your jumping team, that's been announced. And you it have an old
been.
Stalwart on there.
We've got a couple of riders who are in their 50s who have both undergone serious neck injuries and come back to the top. In fact, if we'd had Tim Stockdale, we would have had three riders who have broken their necks and come back to top level competition, which is a bit excessive possibly, but both Peter Charles and Nick Skelton are in there to be our kind of old and experienced too. And then we've got two younger riders in Ben Mayer and Scott Brash. So I think it's an exciting team, and we'll have to see how we get on.
Now, Nick, this is his fifth or sixth Olympics?
I think it might be his sixth, but maybe, yeah, I think he did the alternative Olympics in Moscow in 1980. So, yeah.
Well, while we're talking about it, too, Andrew Hoy, who is competing for Australia, is now competing in his seventh Olympics. He's the first Australian to compete in seven Summer Olympics ever of any sport. That is one thing, you know, when you think about it, Victoria, because our competitors compete till they're much, much older in age, all the way into their 60s and 70s, that we always set the records in the equestrian side for competing in the most Olympics because we last longer.
Indeed. I think there's one other sport where a lady started competing when she was about 18 and carried on until she was in her 50s. And I can't remember which. I think
probably
it was canoeing
some
or something. It was, yeah, it was something. I think it was canoeing, something very odd like that. But in equestrianism, we're lucky that, you know, it's so much is based on experience. And if you can produce a horse to the top level and do it over and over again, then fair play. If you can compete at that level, it's not like some of the other sports where you come out at 18 and you're retired at 24. So it's quite nice to, we're raising the age of the average age of the Olympic athletes village. It's good to see.
Well, so I got a quiz question for you. Can you tell me who is going to be competing this year, who will be competing in their 10th Olympic Games?
Oh, gosh. I can't
think
of it at all.
It's show jumping.
America.
It's one of your former colonies.
Oh, former colonies. Let me think. I can't think at all.
Canadian Ian Miller.
Ah,
competing.
Very good.
Yeah. 10th games. That's
that
a
is
lot
impressive.
Of Olympics.
Mary King's a spring chicken.
Yeah, that's true.
Everyone's saying, you know, she's doing her sixth and it's a record, but actually there's quite a few in there.
Yes, there is. There is actually quite a few. Now, let me ask you, too, the next thing you wanted to talk about was Barbary, which we discussed a little bit because our own Samantha Clark was over there covering it. But tell me about it.
At Barbary, we had Jenny and Jess were there filming, and it was basically quite interesting because it had all the Olympic team out in force, but no one could come near Andrew Nicholson, you know, first and second in the three-star. It's pretty impressive. And so the New Zealand team was announced this morning, and funnily enough, he's on the team, which might not be that surprising. So great news for him.
Yeah, that is good news, for sure. And what else is going on? You recovered from your show? You were the press officer for a big show here recently. Are you recovered and now going into Olympic mode? Or
I'd like to say I was, but this year, because of the Olympics, there's two big shows at Hickstead, and they're now even closer together because the Royal International has been brought forward. So I have 3 weeks at home, and then I'm back down to Hickstead in a couple of weeks' time to do the Royal International, which is where we have our Nations Cup and we have the Eventing Grand Prix, and it's always a really exciting one. So, yes, I'm looking forward to that. But
now, that
would
be... Is there also driving at that one? Do I remember?
There is. There's there's carriage, scurry driving and showing driving. There's not driving trials. That's Windsor that
right.
has the driving trials. But yes, there's lots going on. And apparently we're also having a rodeo competition, although I haven't heard this for sure, but I've heard whispers that they had a rodeo bull at Barbary, of which you can see that on our website at the moment, video footage from there. And I've heard they might be coming to Hickstead. So I'm looking forward to seeing which rider can stick on this rodeo bull.
Well, I think we reported on that last week, and I think the way it went is the eventers were against the jockeys at Barbary. And now the winner, I don't know who won. Do you know who won that?
Paul Tattner won on the first day, so won for the eventers. And then on the second day, apparently one of the jockeys didn't show up. I think maybe he was frightened of the rodeo bull. and so they recruited an event rider into the jockey's team, and the event rider then won. So nobody was happy. The jockeys weren't happy because he hadn't really won it. And the eventers were like, well, but he's an event rider. That doesn't count. So I think it might have been Sam Watson that won the second day. I could be wrong, but yes.
See, that kind of stuff happens anytime you put two competitive groups like that together.
Indeed.
Nothing's ever fair. Now we're going to go compete against the show jumpers, who are used to falling off on a regular basis as well. So
exactly. I mean, I think jockeys have obviously got the stick ability, but event riders have got those long legs. You see, jockeys are only used to riding short, and whereas if you've got William Fox Pitt's long legs, you can just wrap them around the bull, and there's no way you'd fall off. So, yeah, I think that's their secret weapon.
Did William Fox Pitt do it? That'd be funny to watch.
I don't know. Maybe he'd have been banned from doing such things with the Olympics coming up. It would be a bad, you know, we can see just how fragile horses are with Topper out now. And riders, you know, their life continues. Yes, they've been picked for the Olympics, but they've still got youngsters to ride and other horses to compete. And I think missing the Olympics because you had a rodeo bull injury wouldn't go down that well with your with your equestrian federation.
No, they probably wouldn't like that a lot. Now, tell us, before I let you go, what's the mood like in London? Are things building? Or, you know, are people complaining? What's the mood like?
Well, somebody tweeted a picture of the stadium the other day, which is on our Facebook page, so do browse back a couple of days and you'll see that. The mood in London is terrible at the moment because it's not stopping raining. It's raining all the time. And we normally do have, you know, We do get summers. Occasionally they happen, and this year it just doesn't seem to be happening at all, and it's rainy and grey every single day. So I'm hoping they're saving up for a 2-week spell of sunny weather. But I think people are getting excited, but now just wondering about transport, and it sounds a bit like, you know, it's going to be Armageddon and nobody's going to be able to move and we're all going to be trapped in our homes and things like that. So, yes, this could be interesting.
And the tickets now, they did a lottery this year for the tickets, didn't they? Isn't that how they did it?
They did it in quite a strange way. You could basically bid for as many different sports as you liked. And I've heard of people who bid for, you know, thousands and thousands of pounds worth and got nothing. I've heard of people that bid for two tickets and got them. And so they tried to make it fair, and then they found it like they've opened it up again and again, and you have to kind of be there at the right time. And I didn't get tickets, and so I was feeling a bit despondent. And now I'm going to be working on, we're doing a daily chat show throughout the entire of the game, so I'm going to be busy doing that. But once the equestrian events have finished, I'm going to go to the final day of the athletics, and we've got pretty good tickets and, you know, reasonable seats, but the amount of money it costs, I think I won't be eating for the entire of September. So it's obscenely expensive, you know, £700 for one ticket, which is a lot of money. And
what was for cross and country, for track and field?
Yes, track and field, and a final day of the athletics, where there's going to be like the 4x100 meter relay, and I think there's going to be about 6 finals and several medal ceremonies, and hopefully we'll see Usain Bolt, because I'm a big fan, but I just, you know, it's a lot of money, and I did have to be persuaded that it was a good idea, and it's, you get sold on the once in a lifetime opportunity, and it's true, we'll probably never get to do this again in our home country, but it's a lot of money.
Yeah, you know, and Janie, when the Olympics were, she lived in Atlanta, when the Olympics were in Atlanta, she bought tickets for one of the events, and she said, you better leave early, because I got so stuck in traffic, I got to see 3 of the
Oh, dear. I think
spent all that money and got
I could probably
three.
Walk there within an hour, so I think I might just I might just head there on foot, just in case.
Yeah, that's probably your best bet, and allow 2 hours, get some coffee along the way.
I could turn up and I could run there. I could jog there in my trainers, and then everyone will think I'm part of the Olympic squad, I think, when I jog to the stadium. They'll be convinced. They might ask me to have a go at one of the competitions. You never know. But I won't. I'll refuse, because I've paid £700 for that seat, so I'm going to be sitting in it.
You're going to be sitting in it.
That's my theory.
Victoria, where can everybody find your programming?
If you head to horseandcountry.tv, lots of our programs available to watch online.
All right, very good. Thank you, Victoria, for joining us again this week. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I will speak to you next week.
All right. Bye-bye. That's horseandcountry.tv. I love having Victoria on. She's such a delight. It's so fun to talk to her. We're going to take a break for our song today, and then we're going to be back with more. I thought we'd do something a little different, seeing it is Independence Day tomorrow. And we're going to play you a little God Bless America by Martina McBride. This is from the 2002 Rose Bowl Parade. It's also one of my favorites. So enjoy this, and Jennifer and I will be right back.
God bless America, land that I love. From the mountains
Well, that was God Bless America, Martina McBride from the 2002 Rose Bowl Parade. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek. I am here with Coach Jen today, who is co-hosting the show. And Jamie is out. She's off practicing her cross country for this weekend when she goes to ride a four-star event out there in California. And every time I say that, she probably gets a little twinge in her neck. No, she's not doing four-star. I'm just kidding her about doing four-star. Because she makes it sound like that sometimes, doesn't she, Jennifer?
Well, you know, the first time you do training, it can feel like a four-star.
True.
You got to remember, it's the first time for the horse, too.
That's right. And this is a horse that she's had issues with in the past, so but been doing very well here lately. So we wish her the best of luck. She'll be back later in the week. And, of course, I want to remind everybody that we will not be here tomorrow because it is the 4th of July here in the United States, which is our Independence Day. So we're going to be heading, Jennifer and I, to a parade, a little local parade here in the morning. We love local parades, but I have to tell you, and I think Jennifer will agree with this, we've lived in various parts of the country, and we've seen 4th of July parades all over the place, but there was none better than in Plymouth, Massachusetts. That was one of the best 4th of July. Wouldn't you agree?
That really spoke to your inner 9-year-old boy. It was just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fire trucks.
With their sirens going, all of them. It was so cool. And we had let me describe the scene, though. We were sitting on the main street that goes into Plymouth, Massachusetts, which, of course, is along the water. It's where Plymouth Rock and all that was. And we lived there for about 2 years. And where we were sitting, the ocean, we saw the road with the parade, and behind that was the Atlantic Ocean. So we had this tremendous view of all these fire trucks going by. And we didn't know what to expect in this parade. We'd never been there before. And it really, the parade, really, before the bands and all that stuff, is led by literally 150 fire trucks with their sirens going. And I'm telling you, fire trucks that you've never seen before, these are the weirdest things. I swear if there's a fire any part of eastern Massachusetts tomorrow, it isn't going to be put out because there's going to be nobody around there.
They're all going to be at the parade.
It was cool. It was one of my favorite parades that I've ever seen ever. And, of course, they had the fife and drum corps and everything that you would expect to see in Massachusetts where this all really started. It was really cool. It was a fun parade to see. But we're going to see a little one here in Florida. We'll let you know how that is. You actually went to a swap meet on Saturday morning locally here. That was quite the deal.
Yes. There's a local tax store called the Tax Shack. And it's actually two separate stores. So it's pretty good size. If you put the two stores together, they're right next door to each other. It's about the size of a grocery store. So it's pretty significant. And 4 times a year, they have a tax swap meet where you pay a couple bucks and you can put a table out. And it's a free-for-all. There's probably 200 stands there. And it was so cool because it was just heaps and piles and piles and heaps of worn-out saddle pads and moldy tack and broken halters and bell boots with no mate, and everything was priced for 50 cents. So it was great fun. I had a blast there all afternoon. I spent about 2 hours there. And one of the unique things that made it Florida were the chickens. There must have been 24 stands there with chickens for sale.
At a horsey tax swap?
Yes. Collecting chickens down here is a big thing. People have just a flock of chickens in the backyard. And I think it's a contest to see who can have the most exotic chickens. The chickens with hairy legs, chickens with top knots, chickens with stripes. Yeah, it was something else. They were picking them up and comparing the feathers and who had the really nicest comb. And, yeah, it was weird. It was kind of cool.
What could a chicken go for at a swap meet?
You can pay upwards of $20 for a chicken.
Wow. That's a lot for a chicken. And do you get a guarantee that it's laying eggs? Can you return it if it's not egg-laying?
Well, sometimes people want the roosters because they're fancier.
Oh. No, thanks. You can have your roosters.
I hope the people who want the rooster are not going to be my next-door neighbor.
We had the worst attack rooster ever when we first had our first farm together. We had a bunch of chickens, and that rooster was nasty. Not only was he loud, he was nasty. He would attack you. I mean, you couldn't go in there without being attacked by that rooster.
He was an aggressive rooster, yes, and he was about 25 pounds. He was a big aggressive rooster, yeah.
Yeah, he'd pretty much bite under your arm and just hang there while you were getting the eggs or feeding the chickens. I mean, he was That rooster got drop kicked a few times. I will admit
he was the Evander Holyfield of chickens. Or no, what was Evander Holyfield? Who was the guy who bit the ear?
Oh, yeah, I can't remember, but I know who you mean. Yes, the boxer.
Evander Holyfield.
Yeah,
I think Evander Holyfield might have been the guy who got his ear bit.
Yeah, I know who you mean. he wasn't.
Anyhow, it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. I can't wait to go back to the next one.
I got to tell you, you had a story in here. We'll just do one quick story before we wrap it up for the day about black caviar. Tell us about that.
That was a very interesting statistic. Black caviar ran at Ascot. Was it last week, week before?
Yeah.
And something that many of us who are horse fans first and racing fans second don't think about is that betting is what makes the horse racing business go round. And according to Betfair, the equivalent of $20 million was wagered on black caviar alone.
And basically you won nothing.
Yeah, right. Now, I don't understand how the whole betting system works, but of the 13 million plus British pounds traded during the Diamond Jubilee win pool, 95% of the total was on black caviar.
Wow. That's why you didn't win anything. The odds were definitely against you there. Wow.
Well, and that's one of the reasons that different racetracks throughout the country, I'm sure folks who don't follow racing closely and especially who aren't bettors, and I am not, but there is a lot of wrangling and negotiating going on, trying to get these horses that have this type of reputation to come to their track and run in their race. If you can convince a black caviar to come and run at your track, that's going to be a significant boon to your bottom line in a given season. So it's a big deal to get that horse to come and race at that track.
Well, thank you, everybody, for being here with us today. We're going to be back again on Thursday. I wanted to thank Dawn Deems, voted for Jamie. She posted that she voted for Jamie in the helmet contest over at horsenation.com. Just scroll down the page, and you'll see helmet contest. Give Chad, her fighter pilot husband and patriot, a vote, and Fighter Jet, her horse, is there. That's the one she's riding this weekend and probably riding right now, actually. Isn't that the one? Yeah. That's who she should be on Jet this weekend. So, hop on over there and give her a vote, if you will. She apparently is still in second place, according to Dawn, as of an hour ago. So if you haven't voted yet, please take time today. I think it goes till noon tomorrow, till noon on Wednesday. So get your voting in before noon tomorrow. She would, I'm sure, appreciate your help. And besides, I don't want to hear her whine about losing for 2 weeks. So,
after this weekend, there's a significant possibility she'll need to replace her helmet.
I hope she's not listening to this. Jamie, that's not an omen. Jennifer's kidding. It was just a joke, Jamie. Just a joke. She has her favorite, she has her Superman underwear to protect her.
Not going there. Not going there.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Happy 4th of July. Be safe tomorrow with all the fireworks and everything. We're going to be putting our dog's thunder shirt on because poor Glory hates the fireworks, and she'll be hiding under a rock someplace tomorrow. But have a terrific time yourself. Be safe and get a ride in and give your horses a hug for us. And as Jamie would say, spay, neuter, and gel. Something else. I forget. Was there something else?
I don't know. Go ride your horse.